welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. We're recording this on Friday, April 25th, 2014, just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Yvonne generously let me reschedule because at our normal recording time, I was taking my kid to the doctor because he'd been throwing up for a long time. And
oh, boy, that's not good.
Was dehydrated, and you know, so they gave him some anti-nausea stuff and a bunch of Gatorade, and he's feeling much better today.
That's good.
Yeah, but he stayed all through school.
So. Well, next week, by the way, yeah. I will be may have to figure out when we do this because I will be in beautiful Scottsbluff, Nebraska.
Oh, that's exciting!
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm tickled.
Well, what are you taking bets in terms of whether the internet and hotel coverage will be better or worse than a couple weeks ago when you were somewhere else in Florida?
You know, I don't know. I looked up the population of Scottsbluff. It's 15,000 people. I'm going there on business. Okay, all right. But, someplace that I, for whatever the heck reason, this customer that I do a business with has a very significant operations center in this town. Scottsbluff has a total population of 15,000 people. Yep. There is no major airport. I am having to go and fly to Denver and drive 3 hours. I went and okay. Because one of my employees went and said, well, you got to drive to Denver and go there. And then I was looking at it. It was like, why the hell don't I just go to Omaha, right? It's in Nebraska. It's 8 hours driving from Omaha.
So it's closer from Denver.
Oh, yeah. It's in the middle of nowhere. But I will be there. I'm looking actually at some pictures of I Googled it. And actually the scenery looks quite
nice,
cool.
Looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a small town. I just saw a picture of the main street. You remember where I lived in Puerto Rico, Corozal?
Vaguely, yeah.
Well, it's bigger.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah,
Small towns are nice. I mean, you're not like going to go out partying or anything, but yeah.
Apparently, nice. Well, not even if I wanted to. Apparently not. Anyway, So bottom line is, yeah, I'm going to be next week. I'll be from an interesting locale, I may have to go back like the following week. So maybe there.
Hey, if it goes really well, maybe you'll move there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It looks peachy. Anyway, so that's that. I mean, in terms of taking bets on whether the coverage there will be better, I am going to right now go and say I actually think it will be better. Okay. How about that?
There you go.
That's my gamble right now.
It's not like where you were the other time was a small town.
No, it was not. That was not by any stretch.
Remind me where you were.
Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville's not a little place.
It's not, which is why it's surprising that why it sucks so bad. But actually, you know what? Jacksonville sucks. I've hated that town my entire life. It's always, every time I go there, always something goes wrong. So anyway, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, so we do have a plan for the show. Oh, you know, and I'll have to, I promised on Twitter that I would use real dice today. So I'm going to run and get some real dice.
We're going to use real dice.
I don't think you'll be able to hear the real dice quite as well because.
Oh, I think
you can't hold them up to
come on the wood. I mean, on the table. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, yeah. you go and you shuffle them in between your hands right by the microphone and you drop them right there. Yeah. I think we'll hear this.
Maybe. So anyway, we're going to talk about the Bundy Ranch thing. Which, yep. Which frankly, like, yeah, I honestly have not followed it very much. I've just been like, oh, there's another one of those things going on. But Yvonne has caught himself up on it, and so we'll talk about that a little bit. We haven't talked about 2016 in a little while, so we'll talk about 2016 for a little bit. There's some developments in terms of Google Plus. Apple had earnings. And we'll talk for a few minutes about this thing that where you know, Putin does this annual talk show kind of call-in thing. And amongst other interesting calls, he did get a call from Snowden. It was actually a prearranged video of Snowden asking a question. And there was some back and forth after that. So that's the rough agenda. And, you know, I'm going to go run and get the dice, and it'll probably, you know, Yvonne can vamp for a second.
No. Let's take a break. You're going to go get the dice.
Yeah, I was hoping you would sing or
something. No. What am I going to do? I'm going to talk, and then I don't know when you come back, and then I run out of material? No. We're going to take a break.
Oh, and you know I would come back and just silently listen to you struggle.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Then I'll have dice, and we'll see where we go. Back after this. You can still sing if you want to.
Feelings. Nothing more than feelings.
And I'm back.
And we're back, and we've got dice.
I've got this set of 7 dice here.
7?
Well, except that's only 5, because 2 of them are missing.
Okay.
And I actually just, you know, when I threw them, one of them went on the floor, and I can't see it anymore.
Okay, but wait, I mean, how many dice do we need? I mean, we're only going to I mean, we only got, like, how many topics?
5.
Right. So,
yeah, no, I only need one, but, you know, I have the whole set that has the 4-sided, the 6-sided, the 8-sided, 10, 12, etc., 20, so I have the whole set, and we use these at dinner to determine who gets to pick what we're going to watch on TV during dinner.
There you go.
And for various other things. So I brought them up from downstairs, but we only need the 6-sided die since we have 5 choices here. So I'm going to roll here, and Yvonne, during the break, assured me that he could hear this.
I guess. Yeah.
I got 6, but we only have 5 topics, so I have to do it again.
Okay.
1. Okay, we're going to start with this Bundy stuff.
All right, so we're going with Bundy stuff.
Bundy stuff. Wait, before you even talk about new developments here, again, I have only had the vaguest awareness of what was going on here, and I had included it on my list of possible things to talk about today, but not as something I've been following directly, but something as I'm more like, you know, I realize something's going on here, and people have been talking about it for a couple weeks now. Maybe we should pay attention or talk about it at all. What the hell is going on here? Back up to the very beginning and tell me okay. What's going on. What was the dispute? Blah blah blah. Okay.
I'll tell you I first learned about this because I have a friend of mine at work who despite being I've always said a very smart person, you know, happens to believe that she could get all the news she needs from Fox News. All right, okay, so it's just every time I mean, it would be like if I got all my information only from MSNBC, or it's just retarded. Okay, all right. So anyway, so she starts going off about this guy and whatever, and that the Federal Rangers came with guns to take him off his land, and that he, I don't know, that he never paid taxes on the. But so some story. Anyway, usually she gets about a lot of it wrong. So anyway, bottom line is, I said, look, I never heard of this shit. I have no idea. All right, I don't know. And what I said was, you know, it sounds like if the Rangers showed up, it's probably because the guy was grazing on federal land, which I went and I read, and he had cattle grazing on federal land. And, you know, in order to mitigate costs of maintaining the land, if you graze on federal land, you got to pay.
There was a thing, right, and correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, I've paid very little attention. Was this land that used to not be federal land, but is now, or something like that?
As far as I can tell, it was always federal land.
Where they didn't used to charge fees, and now they do?
As far as I can tell, neither of those were true. Okay. I mean, they could be, but I looked, and as far as I could tell, neither of those were the case. Now, or maybe they didn't charge fees, and they started charging the fees, but look, grazing land, it costs. You gotta have land. You gotta take care of it. You gotta clean it. It costs damn money. All right. Okay. It's not a free thing. We had land, and I remember that we had some people went and stuck cattle grazing in there illegally. We had to go and throw them out. okay, all right, we have to take the damn, you know, we found who it was, and we said, listen, either you take them or we're going to freaking go. Look, we're gonna sell them, okay? It's a complicated thing. So most, you know, so this guy apparently had been grazing land on grazing his cattle on federal land, and he had been refusing to pay for some time. And there was a court order to basically, you know, either get him to pay or take his cattle off the land. And apparently when the rangers showed up to enforce the order, I don't know, a whole bunch of sympathizers were like a whole bunch of militia members. I mean, I see one here with a frickin' machine gun, went and like were threatened the federal rangers from going in and like enforcing the court order. So, you know, so he's gotten a lot of, and a lot of people, even like Rand Paul, and some people would say, yeah, this is the overreach, because there's been a lot of disputes in the West about federal lands, because there's a lot of open land that is federal land out in Western states.
And one of the questions in terms of overreach is, okay, so he owed money. Okay. Yep. So let's grant, for the purposes of argument, that the federal government has the right to charge fees for this, and that he should have paid. At what point is that worth? Is what the government does in reaction proportionate to the offense? And how far should they go over essentially a tax dispute?
I mean, well, how far does the federal government go over a tax dispute in general? I mean, I had a tax dispute with the IRS. They were going to go and like, I mean, they come in and seize your assets. They have the power to go and like do whatever in order to collect the money. I mean, what makes him any different or special?
Well, right.
I mean, they did take my money. Well, I mean, like, eventually, in order to get the money, the IRS took the money. Period. Well, right.
But like, so for instance, okay, fine. So they can,
I mean, that's the law.
They can attach his income. They can do this. At what point do they send people to arrest you?
And well, the reason they were sending the people over were not to arrest them, as far as I could tell. I believe it was to basically get him to take his damn cattle off the land where he wasn't supposed to have them in the first place.
And then this was escalating because instead of, you know, submitting, he was threatening to defend.
Right. Correct.
I mean, with violence if necessary. And he's been quoted as well as saying, you know, like, he doesn't recognize the government or something as well. I don't know. I'm talking out of my ass. So you tell me. You've read more than I have here.
Well, it said over here, Mr. Bundy, whose family has grazed cattle here since they homesteaded in the 1870s, owes the government more than $1 million in grazing fees. He stopped paying after the Bureau ordered him to restrict the periods when his herd roamed the 600,000-acre Gold Butte area as part of an effort to protect the endangered desert tortoise.
So wait, where are you reading? So
I actually pulled a article that was at the cover of the New York Times today. Okay. Mr. Bundy's case happened to heat up around the time Mr. Paul, building the foundation for a presidential campaign, struck a chord with some members of the Republican Party with warnings about government overreach. You know, government bullies how everyday Americans are being harassed, abused, and imprisoned by the feds. Okay. You know, they've been trying to get him to move the herd, and he had been refusing. And then they showed up to enforce the court order, and they threatened the federal officers with guns. I'm trying to understand. You know, I don't know about you, but I mean, really.
So
how does this guy get a pass on this?
So if they came
over here to collect money from me, the government, and I freaking had a gun out, I would have been shot, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's lucky he's not dead. And they would have had a right to.
So I think part of that was that it wasn't just him. It was, a bunch of his supporters there, too.
Right.
And they're worried about having, you know, another Branch Davidian situation.
Oh, no, I hear you 100%.
And this is where the proportionate thing is, okay, the guy owes $1 million. You know, is it worth killing him over? Is it worth killing a dozen people over?
Of course not. But my point is,
if he's shooting at you, okay, obviously the federal officers are going to shoot back. But that's, you know, it's a question of do you how far do you push that at that point? So, like, I'm reading another summary of this, and I'm looking at Vox, by the way, and this is the new startup that's been live a couple weeks now, that their whole thing is trying to do summary explanations that you can go to that give you the main facts over a news or item or whatever's going on. The government sent agents to get the cattle. Hundreds of protesters showed up, some of whom were armed, and the situation threatened to get violent, so the government backed down for the time being and returned the cattle, for the time being.
Right.
Bundy won't admit that the federal government owns the land at all.
Right.
And he says he abides by almost zero federal laws.
Right.
He says he believes the land belongs to the state of Nevada, I presume, and the federal government has no business being there.
Okay, even if it belonged to the state, you would get charged for grazing. Okay, is all right, the point. Are we to recognize that the Nevada is part of the United States? Honestly, he could go screw himself.
Are we to believe here that if the state of Nevada was charging him the $1 million, he'd be like, okay, here's your million?
Exactly. I don't think he would be either. Okay, I think the guy's a weasel. Okay, and oh, by the way, today he decided to go on some rant. Okay.
Yeah. Slavery and something.
I've got the quote here. He went a long discourse. There was only one reporter and one video, but he thought, obviously somebody taped it. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro, he said. Mr. Bundy recalled driving past the public housing project in North Las Vegas. And in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids. And there was always at least half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for the young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, so now what do? They abort their young children, they put their young men in jail, and because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've always wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton and having a family life and doing things? Or are they better off under government subsidy? They didn't get no more freedom, they got less freedom.
And by the way, I'll point out that a bunch of the people who were otherwise being somewhat sympathetic and saying, yeah, okay, maybe the government is overreaching a little bit here, when he said this, all started saying, okay, well, he's full of shit on that, and we don't really want anything to do with him anymore.
Yeah, basically. So basically, we should still have, black people would be better if they were still slaves. According to Mr. Bundy. The point I was bringing is, a whole bunch of Republican people just latched onto this bozo. Okay, all right, just because they figured that they could use him for political gain because it sounded cool and whatever, Mr. Anti, because all the frickin' Republicans, of course, they all run the government. They've been like in government. They sure as hell do quite a lot of shit with the government, like surveillance and shit and whatever. But for whatever the hell reason, whenever they're running for office, they talk, oh yeah, I'm the anti-government candidate, and I'm like, it's just, I don't know what the hell, and what the big appeal about that is to a lot of people, I guess.
Look, and I'm trying to see his side of the story here. The land, this land has been federal land for decades, but not forever. I mean, well, it's hard. I mean, he got.
But dude, can't go out.
No,
the land doesn't revert for
whatever
free.
Whatever transactions transpired that ended up being this being federal land were undoubtedly, he's like, oh, it belongs to the state. The state knew about this. The state doesn't object.
Right.
The state is like, yeah, the federal government can run this land, and the federal government owns a very significant part of the state of Nevada. Right. Whether you like it or not, that's the situation. And look, there are legitimate things to be said about should the federal government own as much land as it should? Should this land belong to the state? Should it be managed privately for that matter? What should be going on here? Should they be charging fees for grazing here? Should they not be? What level should those fees be? Blah, 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 blah.
Listen,
there are all kinds of legitimate questions here.
Yeah,
but the moment you've got your guy who is not disputing those issues through some sort of legal process, but instead is just like, I don't recognize it. I'm not going to pay. And if they try to make me pay, I'm going to be here with my rifle and defend myself. Then it's like you've moved from a legitimate political argument about the proper role of government to wacko land.
Well, and then when you start doing racist
shit at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like you got a real winner here. You know, this is not somebody that you want to hang political arguments on. And so that's why that's partially why you got a bunch of people backing off from him today. After he started making slavery comparisons and all this nonsense. But it's like, okay, maybe there are some legitimate issues, but the second you got a Yahoo like this, it distracts from all that. And just to do a parallel, this is similar to what you were talking about Snowden going public. Like, the second Snowden was public, then everybody who wants to can ignore the issues at hand and Correct. Say, look at Snowden.
Right. Correct. And that's basically the same with this guy. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there may be legitimate issues here, but the second you got a Yahoo like this as your face, then it discredits anybody even talking about the issue because it's now attached to this idiot.
A rancher group that was quoted in the story basically said, we understand some of he has some legitimate beefs, but this is not civil disobedience he's doing. It's anarchy. You've got a lot of other ranchers in this country that do business and make a good buck and pay for these fees. And I'm sorry, just because one guy wants to be a weasel and be able to graze his cattle for free.
Let me look. There's a little bit more background here. And again, I'm reading off Vox here. So the change that happened was in 1993, the Bureau of Land Management increased the restrictions on grazing. And part of that was to protect an endangered desert tortoise.
Yes.
And they required him to pay the fee if he wanted to continue grazing on that land at that point.
Correct.
Bundy refused to pay and kept his cattle there anyway. He did actually attempt at one point to pay. He submitted a check to the county government instead to protest the feds, but the county returned it for lack of jurisdiction. And so the federal government fined him, and he wouldn't pay that either. And so the $1 million is now unpaid fees and fines. He's been in court about this for 20 years, has lost repeatedly, and refused to comply with the court orders that have been issued time after time. And then the last thing is a Nevada court judge permanently banned his cattle from grazing there in 2003 and authorized the government to confiscate the cattle. Look, yeah.
My point is that there's quite a lot of ranchers that make...
At some point, you got to say, okay, you know, I have gone through, you know, a 30-step process trying to make my case. I lost.
You lost. Big time. Yeah.
And you can still argue whether that should be right, but, you know, one of the core values, of, you know, sort of the American experiment, at least in theory, is respect for the rule of law, which means you may not like the law, and if you don't like the law, you fight it in the legislature, you try to get people elected who agree with you and change the law, but the law is what it is, and you try to, and you live within it for the most part. Now, there is a place for some form of civil disobedience. I'm not one who, I actually think that if there's a stupid law, it's potentially okay to not abide by it. However, and we talked about this in the Snowden context as well, part of civil disobedience is living with the consequences. So, okay, don't pay the damn tax because you don't believe in it. But then when they come to arrest you, go the fuck to jail.
Yeah, if that's what you want.
Because that's part of the civil disobedience is saying that, you know, okay, I believe this law is wrong. I'm not going to abide by it. But then I have to live with those consequences. And then from jail, I can make my case and people can rally around me and you can have the people doing free Bundy signs and all that kind of stuff. That's part of the process of civil disobedience.
Free Al Bundy? No, wrong guy.
And if you feel that strongly about it, then fine, do that. But don't not pay and then expect not to suffer the consequences of not having paid.
Right.
You know, or whatever the law is that you're protesting. If you choose to ignore the law, you need to go in there with your eyes open of what are the consequences of not paying attention to that law.
Brian Stelter, the media guy at CNN, went and just retweeted CNN's Beal Weird of Bundy. How does it feel to be abandoned by your friends on Fox? Anyway, well, that's pretty much that. I mean, there's not much. This guy's just, you know.
Well, my thing is, they backed off, quote unquote, for now. I suspect this isn't necessarily over.
I don't think it is. And I think at this point, with his support like dwindling, I think that going in and like basically enforcing the law will be a little bit easier at this point.
Yeah, maybe. And you know, this is the kind of thing where, you know, the government has to be smart on this. The whole Branch Davidian thing was a crazy fuck up. That should never have happened. You know, as an example, what was the other? There was another one even before the Branch Davidians where there was a similar loss of life for people going after somebody who was resisting something or other. There have been a number of these cases where people have been killed that didn't need to be killed. And innocents have been killed, like the Branch Davidians had tons of children in there. You know, that does not need to happen. The government has resources more so than any single individual. They can wait them out. You know, they can put a siege around the damn place and wait them out, you know, or whatever they need to do, or just, you know, ignore them for a little while, wait till they go to the grocery store and then nab them then or whatever, you know. There are ways to be smarter about this. You don't have to go in there with guns blazing. That should never be the approach that is taken in these situations because it's just plain not necessary.
Well, interesting. All right.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back with something else. I'll get my dice ready again. Enjoy this exciting break.
We're back.
Okay, now I'm choosing from four. I'll use my four-sided die, although it doesn't make as exciting noises. You know, here's a 20. Now, a 20-sided, that's nice, you know? There you go, 20 sides. Here's a four-sided for the four remaining choices. Here we go. One. 2016.
Okay, beautiful. So, all right. Well, you know more about this than I do. I have been really...
So let me start. Let me start for anybody who's been following my slow progress on setting up my website for tracking 2016 polls. I've basically done jack of any significance in a month and a half, at least now. I know what my next steps are going to be. I just haven't had the continuous time to sit down and do it. Or I should say I've had occasional stretches of continuous time, but I've chosen to do other things with them. There's still time before 2016. But, you know, I know I need to get on it. I've got a lot to do. And if I only do a little bit of work every few months, I'll end up pushing right up against 2016 before I'm dead, before I get to the deadline. Just because I know there's a lot I want to get in place that's not there yet. At the moment, I'm not even caught up on polls. Like, any polls from the last month and a half, I don't even have on my site yet. All of that's, you know, just prepping infrastructure for the most part. Even looking at those polls on a state-by-state basis really is very premature at this point. Not because it's necessarily meaningless, but because there's still not enough coverage, not enough polls in enough areas to really say anything. And of course, even if you did say anything, it's the situation now, which is not necessarily predictive of where the situation will be 2 years from now. So anyway, I just wanted to apologize. I'm not making progress as fast as I would like. I'll get to it. But the things that are going on right now is we're in a phase right now called the invisible primary. For anybody who's read about this stuff. And this is basically where the candidates, nobody's quote unquote officially announced yet, but you know, you can tell very easily a number of people who are clearly thinking about it strongly. And some of them basically, I mean, for God's sake, Hillary's running, okay? You know, she may, who knows, something may still happen. She may officially decide not to, but
well,
for God's
sake. I would say that the odds are that she will be running, yes. Yeah. I'm not gonna put it 100%, but I will put it at least at 80%.
I think something has to happen. Like, look, if she wants...
She gets ill. What happens if Chelsea's pregnant and the baby has problems and she doesn't want to leave that way? You know, who knows?
I don't know if that would stop her. But anyway, look, the thing is...
I mean, I don't know. She's over 70.
There was an article I tweeted earlier today, actually, that said even given her age, if she was inaugurated president, her expected remaining life at the day of inauguration would be greater than a number of recent presidents. So she's got potentially time, like just looking at actuarial stuff. But my point is, if she was seriously thinking that not running was a very strong possibility, there are things she could be doing to discourage all the people who are out there organizing on her.
Oh, yeah. No. Agreed.
And she is not doing that.
No, she's not doing that at all. No. I mean, I totally agree. What I'm saying is that, I put it at 80%.
Yeah.
I mean,
if I had to do odds right now, I'd say there's a 60 to 70% chance she's the next president, period.
Agreed with that, too.
You know, so... that's not 100% by any means. There's a lot going on, but you know, if you had to ask me today who's the next president of the United States, I'd say Hillary.
And I'll tell you what, the one guy that I don't see running is Jeb. I saw him talk about a few different things the last couple of weeks. Man, I just don't think he's running.
Here's the thing. Like, look, he's clearly thinking about it, too, but he's thinking about it less seriously than Hillary is.
Totally.
But look, he's the guy right now, the quote-unquote establishment folks were really counting on Christie. Then Christie started imploding.
Right.
And so now they're looking around for who else can we do, and Jeb's the next guy they're looking at as you know, hey, he's a known quantity, he's somewhat conservative, but he's a moderate conservative. He's not, you know, he's not going to rock the boat very much. The establishment Republican Party wants to find their guy that they can throw their weight behind, like they threw their weight behind Romney last time around, and McCain the time before, and Bush the time before, the quote-unquote establishment folks, they don't want Rand Paul. They don't want Ted Cruz. They don't want any of these other guys here that are, you know, out there and also clearly planning ahead for running. They want someone, quote-unquote, more mainstream. And what, and this is where the invisible primary thing I was talking about before. The invisible primary is the candidates lining up the support of the money people and the staffer type folks who would, the campaign manager kind of people and these kinds of folks and building up the organizations behind the scenes that would run their campaigns, and getting the support of those type of people. And this isn't, you know, the people, you know, running through Iowa and New Hampshire. This is, you know, people going to meetings with rich guys. Right. And people talking to people who've been involved in previous campaigns and previous administrations and trying to get their support. Because what happens is if you get the support of well-connected people and well-moneyed people, then they can help you ramp up to the point where you can potentially be serious. And so that's the process that's going on right now. And you, of course, you also see people positioning to just get their name recognition built up. I mean, sure. Clearly Rand Paul, you know, has been doing a number of things to make sure he's in the news, make sure people are talking about him, make sure he's distinguishing himself both from sort of the social conservative types and the establishment conservative types and, you know, and put himself out there. But the prediction I made, if you go back like the day of the 2008 election, when I think our next show, we started talking about 2016. We probably talked about 2016 even before the 2008 elections, actually, or 2012, before the 2012 elections, I should say. But the prediction I made at that point is like, look, the establishment is going to get behind somebody. And that somebody is going to end up being the Republican nominee. And you're going to have them versus Clinton. And you're going to see a repeat. I think I went further and said, in order to win the nomination, that'll be a relatively moderate Republican. But to win the nomination, they're going to have to appeal to the conservative base. And that process will damage them with moderates and hurt them in the general. And then they will lose. And the Democrat will win.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the Republicans just have no good way. I mean, unless something radically different happens in the next couple of years, they have no good way of being able to put some kind of a moderate.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, right now, the way the party is structured. A semi-moderate can still win the nomination by appealing to the conservative base, but in the process of doing so, they damage themselves in the general.
Yeah.
However, here's the thing: we're seeing a situation that is eerily familiar, eerily reminiscent of 1992, where all of these sort of the sort of bigger name Republicans, the 1992 example, all the big name Democrats declined to run.
Right.
Because George H.W. Bush looked so strong.
Was unbeatable, right.
And so then you got this no-name Bill Clinton, who came in and won the nomination.
But this is different, because remember, this was Bush's re-election.
No. I know. There are a number of differences.
Hillary's
here.
Not an incumbent.
The parallel I'm saying is that the candidates that the establishment Republicans could get behind might not run. So you may have Christie too damaged by then. You may have Jeb decide not to run. Are there who else? Rubio? Does Rubio fall into that category?
I keep getting the vibe that Rubio is not angling to run 2016.
The vibe for him, what we've heard so far, is definitely if Jeb runs, he won't. And that he could probably use with a little more seasoning anyway, so the next time around might be better anyway.
Right.
But the question, we don't have a lot of these establishment-type names. So the scenario I outlined...
What about Quayle?
Whatever. Look, the establishment gets behind some relatively moderate Republican and pushes them and floods them with money, and they win by default. That scenario only works if one of those people ends up, you know, in a position where the establishment can do that. The other possibility here that we have, so possibility number one, which I still give, I give odds a little bit. I think it's the most likely scenario is still what I outlined. Maybe it's Christie, maybe it's Bush, maybe it's some other relatively moderate Republican or rhinos, as the right wing calls them, ending up with a nomination through the establishment getting behind them and pushing the money. I still give that the greater chance, but there's a very significant chance, and growing, I think, at this point, that none of those guys manage to get it together and get the establishment behind them and actually run and become convincing, in which case you end up with this second group of people that is not establishment mainstream, and you get the Republicans having to pick between them. So you get the Rand Paul for the libertarian guys, you get, I don't know, Huckabee or Santorum or somebody for the social conservatives, and you get maybe Ted Cruz or somebody else in there on sort of the Tea Party-ish side, and you end up with a nomination battle that ends up fighting between these guys. And in those kinds of scenarios, I actually can see Rand Paul taking it. My prediction, if you go back earlier, my prediction was another one of my predictions was that Rand Paul would run this time around. He would do better than his father ever did, but he would not win the nomination. But look again in 2020, and I thought he had a really good shot in 2020. But if these establishment folks don't get their act together and get backing behind a single candidate, he's got a shot. And so do some of these other guys, for that matter, because then, you know, the stuff we've been talking about the Republican Civil War becomes real, because then you've got candidates representing all of these slices of the Republican Party without the sort of bland person that nobody likes, but everybody is willing to settle for, which is what happened the last few election cycles, is the Republicans have ended up with the guy that none of the Republican factions really like, but they're all willing to settle for. If you don't get a candidate like that viably in the race, then guess what? You have to pick one of the other guys or the party splits apart. And I'm not predicting the party splitting apart right now, but I could see Paul taking it. And frankly, like, I think this would be actually fairly healthy for the election cycle. I mean, honestly, I think if Rand Paul was the nominee, I might actually end up voting for him over Hillary Clinton. I don't know. I have to think more about that. But because there's a lot of Hillary stuff I don't like. But look, he would probably get crushed in that. But have the clearest differentiation between the candidates that we've had in a generation.
I'm going to disagree with that, because I got to tell you something. The candidates have been getting more differentiated on almost every election cycle the last few times.
I will buy that on a number of issues. However, like, and this is comes to like what issues are important to you. Like, for instance,
they like healthcare, taxes, budget.
But look, here's the ones that I'm interested in. I'm interested in a less adventurous foreign policy. I'm interested in
even that.
I'm interested in rolling back the surveillance stuff. I'm interested in I'm actually interested in rolling back intellectual property stuff. I don't know what Paul's issue is on that, but look, the last few elections on foreign policy, there has not been a significant, they'll talk it up, but there has not been a significant divide. We have the foreign policy consensus that has basically run things since World War II, that the United States needs to be out there, needs to be adventurous, needs to be pushing our agenda on the world.
Okay, dude.
And both Republicans and Democrats agree on that. Both Republicans and Democrats are aligned on this surveillance stuff.
You're on crack. Let me look. I'm sorry. No. The American foreign posture, despite the fact that we have a number of troops still outside the U.S., substantial one, number one, we have a lot less. Number two, other than Mr. Bush and his lunatic excursion the last decade, okay, all right, if you look at Obama's Obama went and basically pulled us out of everywhere we've been.
I will give you that. Obama's pushed us out of everywhere. Okay, he has made noises in various places, but he hasn't actually done much outside of Libya.
No, in Syria, everybody was saying the bomb. He didn't bomb. He didn't go into Egypt. We didn't even really go into Libya. The Europeans went in.
I can buy that, but if you look at Hillary, she would have.
Maybe. Okay, maybe. But what I'm saying is that don't say there's a differentiation, because certainly Obama came in.
I said specifically Hillary versus Paul would be a huge differentiation.
No, but I'm talking in general, a differentiation between the candidates. I think the candidates in the last few election cycles have had certainly significantly different positions on quite a lot things than they had 20 to 25 years ago.
I'm not one of those who say there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. There are huge differences. It's a question of which things they emphasize, which things they push. But on a lot of issues where Republicans and Democrats are normally fairly aligned with each other, Rand Paul specifically takes the other position from both of the mainstreams in both parties. That's what I'm saying.
But Rand Paul likes to take the different position of everything. I mean, I don't know. Anyway,
I'm just saying that would be an incredibly interesting election. And, I honestly think if it was Hillary versus Rand Paul, I think Hillary would win in a landslide. But I might vote for Paul. I might.
I mean, we could get Quayle back. I just pulled up some quotes from Quayle. I mean, come on. He's 67. He's younger than Hillary.
He's not doing stuff anymore, but I believe his kids are running for office and doing things.
Yeah.
It says, for example, he said, we have a firm commitment to NATO. We are part of NATO. We have a firm commitment to Europe. We are part of Europe, apparently. Or, like he said, if we don't succeed, we run the risk of failure, for example.
Yes. Bring up all the quotes. I mean, George Bush had a bunch of fun quotes, too. And so did, Quayle had a bunch of fun quotes, but he did get a bum rap.
I do agree. You got a bump rap. The whole problem. He wasn't.
You could listen to this show and pull things that I've said that out of context completely look idiotic.
Agreed.
You're idiotic with even in context.
But I agreed. But his whole bigger problem was, well, aside from misspelling potato, but the bigger problem was, let's face it, it was that frickin' debate with Lloyd Benson. Okay, I mean, it was just...
Yvonne, do you really want to, like, get sucked into... What year was that? 88?
88. Anyway, all right, well, all right, so we can't... So you're telling me the Republicans are not going to drag out Quayle. Damn.
No, the Republicans are not going to drag out Quayle. Jeb may run. I think if Jeb ran, he could win the nomination.
I am going to put... the chances of Jeb running at 10%.
Only 10.
I'd put it
at 50-50.
If Jeb had wanted to run, he would have run already. Jeb never wanted to run. And this is really wishful thinking on the establishment Republicans.
The establishment is trying to draft him. They are trying to convince him.
But Jeb never wanted to do it. Okay? Jeb is having seen him here a lot in South Florida because, he's there. He's a big family guy. If you read about him, I think he knows his mother doesn't want him to run.
Okay. although he made her back up. There was a wonderful Twitter exchange after her interview where, he basically put something on Twitter. It was like, thanks, Mom.
Exactly.
You know?
So, yeah. So I, you know.
Because she, of course, said that we don't need any more Bushes. Or, to be fair, she said we don't need any more Clintons either.
Bushes or Clintons.
She said, you know, look, we've got plenty of other families out there in this country that are producing really good people that should be running things. Because people have put out quotes that, what was it? Something like, if you look at, I think Nixon's and Bush's and one other family, like there hasn't been an election going back almost to World War II without someone from one of these three parties being either a presidential or a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
You know, and okay.
Yeah, enough is enough. I mean, I would agree. I mean, I honestly kept thinking about it. I mean, I really wish Hillary wouldn't run, but I'm pretty sure she is going to.
I think she's going to run too, absent something unexpected happening. And of course, we've said before, if she doesn't run, then we've got total chaos in the Democratic Party too.
Yeah. Maybe Gore will come back.
The Cuomo's son is one of the people who might come in that situation.
Mario's there you go. There you go.
But look, hey, for someone who wants to the fun of this, having both sides completely open fields
would
like
be
it
fantastic.
Was in 2008 would be great.
It would be great.
So much fun. But I think we're going to have, you know, Hillary walk away with it on the Democratic side, and we're going to have...
McCain's still alive. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know.
We're going to have a fun battle on the Republican side, and I think the main question to watch out for, and this is before 2016 again. By the time we get to 2016, we will know a lot about what the Republican field looks like. The big question in 2015, you're seeing little bits of it now, but it'll really heat up in 2015, is who does the establishment get behind on the Republican Party, if anybody? Because the whoever the establishment starts getting behind is the automatic front runner. That doesn't mean they necessarily will win. It means they are going to come into things with a huge advantage in organization and money and everything else. And it'll take a remarkable upstart to push them off the front runner status and get somebody else in place. Now, there are all kinds of scenarios that could lead you there. But the problem is, you know, what we saw last time and the time before is that the challengers on the Republican side, the non-establishment folks, couldn't get behind one person. So you had the situation where we had last time around. We had, you know, we had Santorum and Gingrich and Paul and whoever else we had.
Oh, Herman Cain.
Herman Cain and all these folks. And, you know, they couldn't coalesce around one person. And that's natural because each one of them was representing a specific faction of the Republican Party. None of them, other than Romney, was really representing the, hey, I'm just a Republican. I'm not the social conservative guy. I'm not the libertarian guy. I'm not the financial guy. I'm the everybody. And again, we get the scenario where nobody really liked him, but people were willing to settle for him. And that's right. And add to that a significant advantage in money and organization. And that's how you get a winner, you know? And so the key to watch over the next year and a half is, do we get somebody that the establishment is lining up behind with money and resources? Because if they do, then that person has a huge advantage going in. And again, maybe it's Christie, maybe it's Bush, maybe it's somebody, who knows, maybe they'll pull somebody out of woodwork. The Republican establishment right now is desperate to get somebody in the race that represents them. That's why they were trying to recruit Bush. Because if they don't get somebody in the race that's representing that establishment point of view, then you got your Huckabees and your Pauls and your Cruises.
Huckabee!
And,
yeah!
And Santorum and all of these guys.
Yes!
And the way the process works, one of them is going to win.
You can see I'm touring to let me interview him again. There you go.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break. We'll talk about this again in another 6 months.
Yes, good idea.
Okay, back after this.
Information.
Hello?
Just a second.
Oh, okay, just making sure that I hit a button over here. Didn't want to make sure I didn't
screw. No, you're good.
Okay.
And we're back. And now we have three things to pick from. I will use my four-sided die again.
Jesus Christ, how long have we been going? All right, you know, we got to speed this show up.
We've been going 1 hour, including our pre-show 10-minute discussion.
Including the cone.
So we've only been going like 45, 50 minutes, really.
Okay, well, come on. We got a lot of...
You know, it feels like it's already been 2 hours, doesn't it?
I know. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Okay, here we go. And we've been averaging like an hour and a half recently.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to...
Cut back.
Yes.
Yeah, get back to an hour.
Yes.
Okay.
Good idea.
Number two, Apple.
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 Well... So, I mean, I don't know how much, I mean, basically, I mean, Apple just today announced the results, and this week a lot of tech companies are announced results, Microsoft announced results, and others, and, you know, we talked about last week how Google went and disappointed on their earnings, but Apple actually significantly exceeded them, and people have been predicting a slowdown in iPhone sales. And
people were talking there was a slowdown in iPad sales, apparently, though.
There was a slowdown in iPad sales. Tim Cook went and a few people are debating the reasons. Tim Cook basically said that the reason last year was because they had a very big surge in Q2 due to late shipments of the iPad mini. And to put into the channel, and that's why he believes that it's a seasonal thing because of the launch of the iPad mini and so forth. That was his explanation, because the previous quarter they did grow significantly. If you look at the trend data of tablet sales, I mean, what it's showing is that they're not growing as fast as they were growing before. There certainly has been a slowdown, but there was growth. But the problem with, like, looking at the quarters, like, especially with Apple, that has so many huge surges and falls depending on product launches, you got to look at least a few quarters in order to see whether the product line is growing or not. So that's why I don't. You know, I just don't go and like go into one quarter. But what you can see definitely on the iPhone consistently, the last couple of quarters has been consistent growth, very robust growth in iPhone sales. 15% this last quarter, and they had really significant growth. The last quarter was over 20%. And let's face it, you know, they were in the face of Samsung launching their new phone, the whatever the hell it's called, the DS5, right? And even in the face of that, demand across the board was strong all over. You know, so basically another positive quarter, and now everybody started talking, oh yeah, Apple knows what they're doing. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like,
so what's with the stock split?
So they're doing a 7-to-1 stock split.
I am now going to have 7 shares of Apple.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have a few more than that. But anyway, I think it's a good thing to do the darn stock split. It's a little bit annoying, you know, when the price of the stock goes that far up. People sometimes want to buy back. It's kind of, you know, you want to sell. It allows you to be able to sell in smaller blocks. For whatever the heck reason, these splits have a positive effect on stock price. They shouldn't really, but for whatever reason, they do. Okay. So
there have been a couple articles with people saying that this attracts the wrong kind of investor, because the kind of investor who really cares if it's, you know, $50 or $500 isn't that particularly sophisticated. They're probably more interested in short-term stuff anyway.
There's not that many people with enough money out there to make a difference in that. Okay. I think certain people have investment criteria. I mean, let's face it. The number of shareholders in Berkshire Hathaway is substantially smaller than, say, the number of shareholders in a company that has a smaller price stock. The reason I mentioned Berkshire is because Berkshire stock is valued like about $100,000 a share.
Yeah.
And as much as I would like to own a share of Berkshire Hathaway, I'm not buying a share at $100,000. Because in order for me to sell a piece of it, I have got no choice. I got to buy the share or sell it. One. Right. $100,000. Having the stock in smaller pieces is something that certainly makes for easier liquidity in the stock.
Well, absolutely. And the point of the people saying this was that, why do you want that extra liquidity? It just attracts the wrong folks.
That's a moronic argument. Attracts the wrong folks. What kind of wrong folks? They all have money. You want to attract people that have money. Who cares? I mean, Jesus, are the wrong people. I know. I read that. I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? This is the first time I've ever heard that on a dividend argument. I mean, on a stock split. Yeah, so I think that what it shows is that Apple's still, you know, strong. And we said this before. I mean, Google isn't as weak as the last results of the quarter showed. Although, I mean, I will say this. I mean, you haven't – people are counting on Apple, I think, launching and many hints of some new product, some new something
to launch.
I have said, and I'll repeat again, the odds I say of Apple launching an iWatch to me are like 2%.
So let me say that the more recent rumors have been focusing this iWatch around some sort of fitness based project thing, instead of being just a, you know, auxiliary to your phone with a little screen to like see your texts on or something.
Alert. Because that's moronic. But those devices are moronic.
Because and I have not been interested particularly in that, because I mean, I'll just pick up my damn phone.
But, exactly.
But you know, I'm wearing one of those like fitness thingies right now, this very second, and I would be very interested in one from Apple.
I wear a band, okay, to go to the gym for fitness tracking. Okay, yeah. All right. You know, it's Bluetooth connected. I wear it, and, you know, it tracks my heart rate and other information to my phone. Yeah, I mean, that would be something that's interesting. That would be interesting because in terms of the fitness piece, I mean, yeah, I do have a strap that I put on in order to have the phone nearby because I want to listen to music and whatever when I'm working out. But for the fitness information, I mean, it does show on the screen while I'm using it, which is okay. But it sure would be a lot easier if I could watch it on my wrist or something. I would tell you that. Mm-hmm. Than doing that. I mean, just in terms of exercising, I think that if Apple's going to launch something, it's going to launch something that's useful. You know, David Pogue last year made a huge amount of fun out of the Samsung Watch. Because it was just useless. I mean, it was like, you know, oh yeah, it allows you to find your phone if you're within 5 feet of it. I mean, which is true. I mean, you had to be like in the same room with it. I'm like, well, why the hell do I want something that's only going to allow me to find a phone if I'm basically within distance of it? I mean, shit like that. I mean, I don't know. It was a bare gimmick. It was useless, and nobody barely bought it. So I've never seen one with anybody wearing one.
Yeah, I think you. No. But look, you know, I think, you know, Apple's undoubtedly researching these things. I think you're right. They will release something if they come up with something that they think is really compelling and useful, and people it'll do something different than what the phone does today. It'll give it's not just, you know, an alternative form factor for the phone. It's not I think also a part of it is they don't want, I think it would not be Apple's culture to make something that would be useless without the phone.
Agreed.
It would be something that you could go in and buy even if you had never bought anything else in the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah.
And still get use out of it.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, so regardless of that, they may have new stuff going on. Anything else to say? Apple was settled that the thing about what was it? Poaching, anti-poaching. Apple and a bunch of other companies made an agreement that they wouldn't steal each other's.
Let me just say this: that wasn't just Apple. I mean, there was Apple, Google, and other companies. But let me just say this: it wasn't just those companies.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that one day I got, when I was working at HP, okay, and I will go and flat out accuse them of participating in that.
Are you making news today, Yvonne?
I can. I went and I had a recruiter from Heidrick & Struggles, which is one of the biggest recruiting firms, executive recruiting firms in the Valley. And I got a conversation with them about them. And they basically told me flat out that they had a non-poaching agreement with HP, that they would not hire any executives if they had been working at HP.
Mm-hmm.
While they were working at HP. And I was like blown away by that. And they flat out told me that over the phone.
And this is illegal, right?
As far as I understood, yes. But the person from Heidrick & Struggles didn't mince words telling me that.
So now, let me ask.
I think I probably still have the email.
Now, there's a settlement.
Actually, they didn't tell me. They wrote it in an email.
Right. Now, there's a settlement that's been announced. And I guess as we're recording this, the judge still has to approve it. But, you know, why the hell do judges approve things like this? If there was an illegal act going on, why do they want the settlement? Why don't they want to prosecute the hell out of these people? I mean, the same thing with all the stuff that happened on Wall Street a couple years ago.
Well, this was a civil case. This was a group of people suing them for money because of it. It was not a criminal prosecution.
Okay.
So,
could it have been?
I don't know. I would think yes, but for some reason it wasn't. So I don't know. You know, so yeah. And,
do you know who the class is? Who gets the settlement money?
That's a great question. Like, I'm not sure.
Is it every employee at these companies because their wages?
You know what? That I was
this?
Actually look. You know what? That I was actually looking for that today. And I did not see that in the, what I was reading today. So I'm not sure.
Because, of course, the argument against this is it depresses everybody's wages. Because if you don't have these non-compete agreements, then people can go, you know, basically go for the highest bidder and you bid up salaries.
Right.
And so, you know, salaries go into an upward spiral. So when you have these non-compete agreements, not only do you limit the mobility of people at all of these companies, but you also keep their salaries down.
That's correct. So, I mean, so it's a great question. I mean, I don't have the answer for that. I don't know.
Okay. Any other Apple things? I don't know. I don't have anything else.
I don't.
Okay. Let's take another break. We'll be back after this.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. We now only have two things left on our list: Google Plus and Putin Snowden. And since we have two things, I can just do odd versus even. So I can use my 20-sided die now. I'm so excited.
Woohoo!
The more sides, the better, I always say. Okay, here we go. Da 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 da! We got a 19, which is odd, which means Google Plus.
Google Plus. Well, it may finally be dead.
So the announcement today is the guy who is the sort of the mastermind behind Google Plus resigned from Google. And then there were some announcements that they were doing a massive reorganization, moving around a significant portion of the Google Plus staff to other parts of the company, and various other things indicating a reduction of the emphasis that has existed on Google Plus the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, well,
because everybody was pissed every time they came in with another change that said, oh, to use YouTube, you have to sign in with Google Plus. YouTube is now Google Plus comments only. Oh, your Gmail is now tied to Google Plus. You know, every time they came out saying something, some other Google product was now integrated with Google Plus and you had to be blah, blah, blah. You know, people just got pissed every single time.
Yeah, I agree.
And Google Plus was somewhat, and because it was initially rolled out as, you know, a competitor to Facebook or Twitter or whatnot, people have been making that comparison ever since and been like, well, it's obviously failing. Nobody's using it that way.
Yes.
Meanwhile, there are a lot of arguments that what Google really wanted wasn't necessarily directly to be the Facebook competitor, but getting everybody on a unified sign up, getting everything, all of their products integrated with this thing.
But they had a unified sign up that did not depend on frickin' that shit.
I know. But you know, the argument was this was a information collection mechanism that did not require everybody to be using it like Facebook. But I think it's clear they wanted to do something like Facebook.
Hell yes, of course they did.
You know, so I think it's revisionism to say anything else. And it's clearly failed at that. I mean, there's still a few people I know who do Google Plus things. And I still will occasionally log into Google Plus.
You do? I don't recall the last time I logged
into Google Plus. Honestly, the one thing I find most interesting about Google Plus, the iOS app does this thing called auto awesome. So there's a setting where it'll automatically suck in any pictures you take on your phone. Mm-hmm. And it will automatically look for sequences of related pictures and make animated GIFs out of them. It will automatically do certain other image enhancement things. And that's kind of cool. I look at that and I'll log into it every once in a while and see what new things did it just do. Like right now, it just made two new auto awesome pictures out of my son, my mother, and I went to a local park with a beach a couple days ago, and it's got a couple pictures. It's got an animated GIF of my son running around with my mom on the beach, and it's got another one that's pretty cool. It's not even an animated GIF. It's like a single multiple exposure GIF of my mom sitting there and my kid running around. Anyway, so that's kind of cool.
But the reality is that, and
when I do log in, I just want to say, like, what I see is not so much people I know posting. It's more like the Twitter experience where I'm seeing, you know, there are a few, like,
you're gonna make me log in. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, Jesus, how the hell you log into this thing?
To Google and you hit the button.
I know. Jesus, I'm gonna go over there in a second. But yeah, so let me see.
Where did I get? I'm even trying to find my timeline. I've been here on iOS. I haven't been on
Ivan web Plus. Browser. Here we go.
But yeah, okay. So I have a couple people I know still post on this. A couple celebrities I follow post on it. There's one or two relatives that still post on here, but you know, it's very sparse compared to the volume I see going by.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh no, these are suggestions. Fuck, never mind. Jesus.
Yeah. As far as like,
continue to Google Plus.
Anyway,
it looks just like Facebook.
It doesn't look like Facebook.
Oh my God. The boxes with the pictures in them and the descriptions, for God's sake. Yeah,
but it's got multiple columns.
Oh, Facebook has multiple columns now.
Mine doesn't. I feel so sad.
Well.
Anyway, look.
I guess you shared a whole bunch of shit. Wow, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here.
What, for me?
from a couple. Well, you actually a few other people. Well, I'm surprised.
I used to, just like I do with Facebook and Twitter. Every time I posted on my blog, I used to put it on Google Plus too. I didn't post anything originally on Google Plus. It was just the stuff from my blog, but I stopped that a number of months ago because it was too much of a pain in the ass. Because they didn't provide any automated tools to do it. Because they didn't want automated posting. They wanted human beings posted, and so that was a pain. So I don't do it anymore.
I guess a couple of people. It's only like two or three people, but anyway. So a couple of weeks ago, somebody went and posted something that said "Social Media Explained." Okay, they wrote it out
That's been going around for a couple of years. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, not a couple of years. Google Plus has been around for how long?
A couple of years,
I guess. Well, anyway. So the one. Gosh, but there's a couple of here. Okay. Anyway, but the bottom line was that I love them. You know, it said Twitter, I'm eating a hashtag donut. Facebook, I like donuts, et cetera, et cetera. But the one that got down at the bottom, Google Plus, G Plus, I'm a Google employee who eats donuts.
Yes. bottom line here, this clearly hasn't worked out the way they wanted it to. And I think the key is, okay, I'm sure you have a few loyal users who really love using it, but you pissed off a whole bunch of other people in the process because they kept getting annoyed at you pushing this on them. By you, I mean Google.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not doing
it. Not you.
Not me, thank you. Okay. So anyway. All right. Well, yeah, Google Plus is apparently, you know.
It's one of these things where they're not shutting it down. It's not going away, but they are reducing the emphasis on it. They've cut the development staff that's dedicated to it significantly. And, you know, they've said essentially that they're going to stop pushing it on everybody, which, yeah, since all you were doing was pissing people off, that's probably a good move.
In this circle, I have a circle. I have a stream layout. Explore. Look, explore. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of fucking commercials I'm seeing in here. Anyway, this thing sucks. Anyway, all right.
Anyway, let's take one short break and then we'll come back really briefly and talk about Putin and Snowden and stuff. Back after this. Okay, here we are.
Yeah.
So the most amusing thing about here was simply that when we were doing the pre-show planning session, Yvonne hadn't even heard that this had happened. So
I had heard about what's his name having Putin. That show that he would take that he would take questions, but I didn't realize that this had happened.
So one of the questions Putin did like basically a 4-hour call-in talk show kind of thing. One of the calls was a prearranged, so it wasn't like live. It was a recorded thing from Snowden that they played, where he basically asked, you know, does Russia do surveillance on its citizens? And of course, Putin said no. And then the fallout of this is, you know, a lot of people on the U.S. side started going after Snowden for saying, look, here he is being a Russian stooge again. He set up through a softball question at Putin, and he's helping Putin out here. And then Snowden went on, did a Guardian editorial, which I have actually neglected to read. I meant to read it, but I didn't get a chance, where he talked about how, no, he was trying to, you know, actually press Russia on the same kind of issues he was pressing the United States on. And, you know, it seems clear to me, like, and there have been some commentary on what did he think he was doing, what was going on, blah, blah, blah. you know, there have been a number of criticisms of Putin, of Snowden since he went to Russia, saying, you know, come on, you got to be kidding me. You're criticizing the U.S. for all of this stuff, and then you end up at Russia, who's got to be worse on all of this stuff that the U.S. ever is.
Yes!
And have you said a damn thing against Russia? And so there's a lot. It basically, this was apparently Snowden's attempt to say, okay, I'll push on Russia too. It just backfired and did not work out the way he wanted.
Not particularly very well, no. Well, my thing is, I mean, Edward Snowden's pretty naive. I mean, let's be real. I mean, I'm not going to rip him, you know, for that. I mean, I just thought it was a little bit funny. I mean, I don't know what he expected, you know, Putin to say. I mean, it's just kind of funny that, you know,
we do. We do it.
Yeah. Look, a lot. Your pictures of you. Check them out. Here are the recordings.
Which I am sure there are.
Tons of them.
Like, there's no fucking way that Putin is not under 24/7 surveillance.
Listen, let me tell you something. Snowden. Every call, every email, every freaking thing, every move. My God. I mean, you know, probably like, geez.
And, you know, as people have said, like, he could be encrypting the shit out of everything, but if they've got a camera over his keyboard, that's not helping you.
Exactly. Who gives a fuck? Right.
And, okay, he's probably scanning for bugs and stuff, too. But it is just un-fucking believable to even think for a moment that Snowden is not under surveillance.
Exactly.
Anyway. The other question that was not asked by Snowden that I wanted to call out, and there were tons of questions on all kinds of topics. They were talking about Ukraine. They were talking about other things. And I probably should have paid more attention to some of it. Although it was, you know, your typical puff thing. It was easy questions and nice answers. It's the kind of things that where political candidates go to the town hall session, but just with their own supporters, you know, that kind of thing. He was asked by one of the Russian people who asked a question about the fact that a number of people were saying that I forget the wording, people were calling Alaska Ice Crimea. And was he going to go after Alaska to get it back next? And Putin basically said he didn't want Alaska back.
Oh gosh. Well, Putin responds. Yeah, we might just respond a little bit strongly to that attempt. Not for nothing.
You know, it's got oil there. It's probably lucrative.
Yeah, I know.
But on the other hand, it has Sarah Palin.
Well, you know, we could
exchange her. Could fix it. She could be correct. She could see Russia from her house. And I know she didn't actually say that. There's the Saturday Night parody, whatever.
Oh, gosh. Anyway,
like, you know, he doesn't need... Yeah, maybe we can fight over Alaska, but I could think of a number of states that I'd be happy to let Putin take.
I don't want to let go of any states.
Oh, okay, you're being nice.
No.
I'm kidding too, obviously.
I like all the states. I'm okay with them. I don't. I may not agree with
Mississippi. All the people.
It's, you know, still Mississippians.
I'm teasing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, not throwing any states out the door.
Not even Delaware.
No, definitely not Delaware.
Not Delaware.
No.
I'm trying to think of useless states. I'm sorry, Delaware is not useless. It's where all companies
West Virginia. Exactly, it's all the corporations are incorporated. No, I can say West Virginia, but I don't want to rip on the West Virginians. They've been ripped on enough for their entire life. You know, all I heard while I was in Pittsburgh was like jokes about people from West Virginia.
No, but I must say though, if Putin really wanted to make things interesting, You know, I'm betting.
Raise the stakes. What do you think?
He could make a significant advance on Alaska before we knew what the hell hit us.
Actually, I don't think he could. To be honest, no.
No,
I don't think so. No, not particularly.
I think he'd have the element of surprise going for him.
You think?
Yeah.
Mm.
If all of a sudden, out of the blue, with no advance warning, you know, Russian paratroopers started landing in Alaska?
Where are they going to land?
Wherever the hell they want. It's a big state.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's a very big state. I have a feeling that we would know quickly.
Well, we would know quickly, but how fast could we react? That's the question. I mean, other than nuking them. I mean, obviously, we could respond with a nuke right away.
Not nukes. Just conventional. Look, we got B-2 bombers.
This is actually a very interesting question to me.
B-1s, B-2s, B-52s. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of...
I understand that. But, like, let's say that Russia, for whatever reason, mounted a land invasion of Alaska. How fast could we react and push those people back out?
I would say within 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that because I would think if our sovereign territory got invaded, it wouldn't be just that. Remember, it'd also be an attack on NATO.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, you also get support from the Canadians as well and everybody else. I mean,
now would it be possible for that scenario to happen without it ending up in a nuclear exchange?
I think so. I don't think
so. Putin should try it.
But we'd kick the shit out of him. I mean, you know, we would go, I mean, we would freaking, you know what? Just to piss him off, we'd probably take a whole piece of fucking Siberia and everything else just for shits and giggles on the way back. Well, we need a buffer.
Yeah. So,
We could without, I mean, and I'm sure we could, you know, if we wanted to.
So obviously, I'm not actually encouraging this to happen. This would probably be a huge disaster on everybody's side.
I would say that we would not be sleeping very comfortably. We'd probably be glued to the TV watching coverage, you know, like every fucking night and morning of what the hell's going on.
Okay. I mean, I am not as optimistic as you that if something like that happened, it wouldn't escalate.
Nah, I don't think I don't think either. I am positive.
I'm not necessarily saying that we'd nuke Moscow and they'd nuke Washington, but if you actually had a shooting war, a direct shooting war between Russians and Americans, it would be a difficult situation, and it would be
a difficult risky situation. But I really don't think that either would use nukes. I really don't.
Okay then.
Okay. So. All right. Well, we're done.
On that insane note, because, you know, Putin's not going to invade Russia. I mean, no, Putin's not. He may well get the rest of Ukraine back, but he's not going to get Alaska.
No.
Now, what if we were to sell it back? Would that be okay?
Oh, depends how much money we could get. If we get like a couple of trillion.
So there is a price for which you would sell U.S. states.
Oh, I mean, now we're talking business now. I mean, shit, if I could get Russia to give us a couple of trillion bucks.
Wipe out the deficit overnight?
Yeah.
Wipe out the debt overnight?
Well, not quite. That's a lot more. But let's face it, make a big dent.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them in hock to us for the rest of our lives. I mean, yeah, for a couple of trillion bucks, I'd be willing to, you know, we could sit down and talk.
Could we sell them Canada?
No, we can't sell Canada. It's not ours.
Damn.
Maybe we could be the brokers of the deal and get a cut, get 10%.
There you go. Okay.
Anyway.
We get increasingly silly. We're out of here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As usual, email us. I'm Abelsmay at abelsmay.com. Yvonne is on Twitter at IamBo. I'm on Twitter at Abelsmay. And we're everywhere else you would expect us to be. Thanks for everything. Tell us what you think about everything. If you have any particular states you suggest we sell, let us know. And we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.